This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boydaderis, Sandy Carney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe. This is your weekly podcast about gamification, gaming technology, and play. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, not of any organization which we have been, are, or will be affiliated. This is GamesAtWork.biz, episode 122, Motivational Design, and was recorded on Friday, the 11th of September, 2015.
Hello, this is Phaedra Boynodiris. Welcome to another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. I am your co-host, and I am joined by Michael Martin, our other co-host. How are you today, Michael?
One of the other Michaels, at least, anyhow, and I'm doing great. Thank you very much. We're missing our other Michael today due to other time constraints and commitments, and things are busy as we're getting here to the end of September for everybody. And we are super happy to have you back on the show because you've been doing lots of things in lots of different places. And I know that I am personally very interested to hear what's been keeping you busy these last couple of weeks.
And I have missed you guys tremendously. And it's been more than a couple of weeks, actually. It's been, I think, since early July. But yeah, I was I got the opportunity to vote to try to keep Greece within the EU. And that was very, very exciting. Exciting times going on there. And then I headed over to Australia for the SimTech conference, which was just amazing. I saw some incredible talks there, met with really cool people, and got to see a live session of Australian Parliament, which was just incredible. So I would move there in a heartbeat. I think we should move our entire show there. What do you think?
Oh, well, maybe. It'll take a little while to get there on the plane. I've always wanted to go to Australia. Tell me a little bit about SimTech. You know, what was the main thrust of this, and what were some of the talks that were given there?
It was a big simulation modeling and serious games conference. There were a lot of folks there from defense and healthcare mainly, but just a tremendous caliber of people there, both presenting as well as the attendees. We also met with the conference was being hosted by the city of Adelaide in southern Australia, and I was lucky enough to be there as they were kicking off an announcement for a citizen engagement hackathon, which is going to be coming up, I believe. I want to say it's in November. So they're just doing some really, really cool stuff down there.
That's awesome. Adelaide always reminds me of Guys and Dolls.
true. Yeah, no, there are some really fun talks. There were some interesting artificial intelligence presentations, you know, showing virtual babies and emotions and how you have you form relationships with avatars that are not real and what that means. And they're just such great conversations. I really, really enjoyed my time there.
Wow, that's fantastic. So after Adelaide, what was the next spot on your global jaunt here?
After Adelaide, I came back here, back home, and I think I'm going to try and stay put for a little while. I mean, it's such a long trek. You need a little bit time to get your sea legs back.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Did you have a particular topic you were there presenting on as well?
Yeah, I had a workshop that I gave on serious games and gamification. It was pretty broad. And then was on a bunch of panels and gave a plenary talk about just the state of the union and where this space is moving to. And I talked a lot about modular cloud development and just gave a bunch of use cases. It was tremendous, tremendous fun. There was this one question from a member of the audience that really inspired a lot of thought for me. I was thinking about it on the airplane. And the question was, with regards to motivational design in general, And if, you know, that certainly there are aspects of it that work very well with most people. But if you find somebody who's incredibly indoctrinated, you know, into cult-like thinking, right? How is it that you might be able to use motivational design to get people out of that mode? And, you know, I had been struggling with the question and thinking a lot about it. And one of the other people in the room where this question was being asked handed me a book about how this one research scientist, how they approached getting people out of cults. Like, what was that? Their whole, thesis was around
decultification.
Decultification. And I was thinking, wow, you know, maybe this is actually possible. But it's a, you know, that we're so divided in so many ways. Not just with regards to politics, but also stances on different issues. I mean, all you have to do is look at the news. But it just, it makes me wonder, you know, how do you approach motivational design with people who are that indoctrinated? Do you have any thoughts on it?
The idea is really quite a powerful one. In many ways, when I think about motivational dynamics, you're applying persuasion and trying to get people to do things that they might not otherwise do. You're trying to affect change, right? And that change is from a current state, and inertia tells you that moving from one state to another is a difficult thing. So moving someone out of a cult structure is really pretty interesting, because you need to replace one set of motivations with another set, almost like people who go through nicotine cessation programs, that they have to substitute something as a sort of bridge and then get to a point where that something is not needed anymore. So, I mean, that's kind of what's spinning through my head right now. And games have that capability. We've talked about this many, many times, where the endorphins are kicked off and you start feeling good and you unlock a puzzle and you now have a new quest to go do. And just that continual drip, drip, drip of the dopamine telling you, hey, this is fun, this is good, try this next thing and you can do a little bit more.
One other thing that someone told me yesterday, it was actually the host of a science TV show. His name is Chuck Pell. I met with him yesterday. He's actually local. He's a local. He's in Durham. He told me that across the board, one key motivator that is the same across all groups of people is that we all want to be a hero. Like, even the bad guys, they want to be a hero, right? It's their own perception. And so he was making the point of saying, everybody already agrees with you. You just need to figure out, like, how do you make them the hero of their own story? And I'm just wondering about that. Like, whoa. You know, is there a lesson learned? Can we use that in some way when thinking about people who are truly indoctrinated into thinking a certain way, how to get them to think out of that? You know, as a hero, you know, is there some way we can use that as a hook?
I like that. That there's a lot to that kind of a story, Phaedra, and it fits so well in with marketing as well, because when you are looking at describing success, you try to create hero stories, right?
Right.
And that's where you then say, hey, look, you can be a hero too if you only, you know, drink this brand of drink, or if you deploy this kind of solution or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Very true. Anyway, food for thought. So I gotta find this book again about getting people out of cults, and it sounds like good reading to me.
It does.
Like bedside reading.
Seriously. And it seems to arch back to the sessions that you had done early in the summer, I think, was in Saxapahaw too, right?
Yes. So my all-time favorite conference, Switchpoint. So put it on your calendars from now, audience, over in Saxapahaw, North Carolina, every spring. But yeah, it certainly harkens to that.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I'm remembering what you're telling us about that particular conference. So that's really, really, really cool too.
Yeah, the focus of that conference was humanitarian design. And again, the premise You know, if you're approaching humanitarian design and you want to make games for good, you want to make sure that the people who are playing, and I don't want to just couch this in terms of a game, just motivational design. If you want to encourage people to think a different way, to even give it a try, what's the way that you go about it? Because you don't want to create an app that only people who agree with your ideology are going to play. You know, the point is to see if you can change minds, if your idea can flourish in other venues. That's the whole premise. So how do you do that with someone who's been, the word I heard was calcified, you know, that their ideas have been hardened? How do you de-harden?
So, you know, this kind of now also spurs a thought for me back to Ian Bogost's writings on persuasive games, too, which... takes games and gaming could be little or could be extensive into a different vector. So just like people have used political cartoons to illustrate how two thoughts cannot possibly exist at the same time when you compare them, and using a cartoon, an editorial cartoon, to kind of show that, games can be done in a similar way where you're playing a game which is a model of reality, and you're applying into that model certain constructs that you then say, wait a minute, this is kind of like reality, but it's different. And for me to win this game, I'm doing something different than I might have done in reality. So does that become now a motivational dynamic to potentially change hearts and minds to operate in a different way? Thinking about
food for thought, food for thought, food for thought. It's that initial hook, though. Like, what do you do to lure people in who have different thoughts, who've got those hardened thoughts? How do you lure? Because they may think, or there may be a perception, oh, well, that's the enemy thought, so I'm not even going to give it at the time of day. So how do you invite people in
in a way
that's not going to turn them off?
Well, it's got to be a rabbit hole, right? You start off with something that is compelling, that is maybe a video or a compelling image. And as you pass through the rabbit hole and then into the game, it gives you enough of that drip, drip, drip again to keep you going to the point where now you learn something new and go, I've got a relationship with this 8-bit avatar and... and I'm seeing something from a different point of view and walking in their shoes and going, if I were that character, how would I optimize my world? And that's a little bit different than what I was expecting.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. There were also a lot of questions, and I continue to get questions regarding what about the word game, and there's a stigma, and there's a lot of that I'm still hearing. But I also see that more and more great examples of serious games and gamification that are never tagged as such. And there's really just a focus on good design, motivational design, and they're just not calling it that. So that I think is interesting. And I've been saying that, you know, this is kind of where this is all moving to, this premise of more engaging design, more thoughtful design with regards to the audience. Also, people-centric simulations. This is another term that's being adopted more and more to make it, to give people a sense of what this is and what this isn't. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, so hence the name SimTech as opposed to GameTech, right?
Right,
so the sim for simulation. Exactly. So... just thinking about the sessions that you had at SimTech, was there a focus, would you say, on mobility in terms of a delivery mechanism for these motivational experiences? Or was it more overarching web delivery? What would you say you saw at that conference?
Oh, I see. There was a conversation about how these games are deployed and where they are played. And it seems like by far they're really picking up on this concept of, you know, having a thin client, whether it's a mobile device, you know, a smartphone, or just a simple laptop, and actually having all of the heavy lifting happening on the back end, you know, on a cloud system of some sort. So that certainly seems to be the overarching case But I'll also tell you there was a lot of interest with regards to the explanation of how to approach one of these design sessions. And, you know, the very first step being that you need to take the time to profile the actual end user, you know, what their experience is like, what they're thinking, feeling, hearing, seeing, you know, what's already on their mobile device, demographic information, and then coming up with a journey map based on that person's profile. Right. So, you know, taking them from awareness to influence to actually being an ambassador of a cause, looking at their day, where is the right time, where and when is the right time to have an experience with them? When are they going to be on their mobile phone? When are they going to be in person in a brick and mortar? When are they going to be in front of their laptop? And in this way, you can curate the experience that would maximize or be optimized for that particular user.
Interesting. So it's almost one of those alternate reality kinds of thinking here too, that you are looking to hit the right influence time points in a way that takes advantage of whatever technology the targeted user might have available to them at the time that they have it. Mm.
Great. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, when I'm thinking about designing for mobile too, especially one of the things that I've seen and I'm very intrigued about, because I think this is exactly where we need to go to, is that you look at what the mobile device brings, right? So technical delivery of information to a screen is one thing. But when you look at a mobile device and you say, well, the mobile device has a camera, it has a GPS, it has an accelerometer, it's got a fingerprint reader, it's got a variety of things that make it different from other screen to eyeball delivery mechanisms. And how do you incorporate those other aspects into the experience that makes the mobile device such a compelling way to go? So if you can kind of combine some of that, where you could have a phone call, you know, be one of the alert things that comes in and says, hey, did you know this is going on right now? It kind of cuts through the clutter of some of the alerting that you might otherwise have. Of course, you have to make sure you're okay with that from an end user perspective, because if you wind up putting all kinds of alerts on their page or on their home screen that they didn't want, that becomes a big, big, big turnoff. But you start to craft, you know, what's mobile and why, and how do you get it to the front portion of that person's brain at the opportune moments to then go do something about it.
Right. Exactly. What makes sense for that particular user? And then can you have that be optimized for them? You know, as you learn their patterns and you know where they are, when and what they're doing, then you can get a better sense as to when to interact with them.
Yeah, right. When they're interruptible.
Exactly.
So this relates a little bit to something that I saw yesterday that caught my attention.
Yes.
And it was Pokemon, you know. So the old Nintendo game, been around for a long, long, long time on Game Boy and multi-platforms, where the objective is to go and catch the pocket monsters, the Pokemon, and collect them and then use them and trade them with your friends and have battles with your friends to see who can win and skill up your Pokemon along the way. I saw a video of what they're planning for next year in terms of making an augmented reality version to leverage the camera on the cell phone and the GPS and proximity sensors to other players so that you could have a tournament or a sharing or a trading opportunity with them. And it, to me, it just seemed really, really, really compelling.
I agree. The one question I had was for demographics. So what's the age range for big Pokemon enthusiasts? And do they have smartphones? I don't know. Do you know?
Well, my feeling is there's probably going to be a little bit of a throwback here. You know, this is going to be, do you remember, oh gosh, what was it? Was it Coleco? There was a handheld football game, which was like LED based. And all it did was you would play football and you could pass the ball and you could run the ball and you would run across the screen. It was just little LED lights. Do you remember seeing this?
Vaguely.
I'll find a picture of it. We'll have it in the show notes. But this is starting to pop back around again in some stores. I'm seeing it showing up again. Actually, it showed up maybe about 4 or 5 years ago and then kind of disappeared, and it's back again. So I think there's a nostalgia play, kind of like with Pac-Man, kind of like with Donkey Kong. You know, all these games are now starting to have like a 30-year anniversaries, maybe 25. I mean, they've been around for a while. So there's probably going to be a set of players that will want to buy and play these things out of nostalgia. Because current generation people playing Pokemon, I can't say that I'm 100% up to speed on this, but the Game Boy delivery cartridge sort of thing is not right now as big as it used to be. So if you're saying kids between, 8 and 14 or so, they're into Minecraft right now.
Right. And I was thinking it's the younger kids below 8, I thought, were more into Pokemon, you know, 5, 6, yeah, 7, like around there. And I just don't see them running around with smartphones. So that's why I was curious. I was curious what you thought. But I like the premise. And I think that certainly we're going to see a lot more games of that nature. I was just, there was the question mark in my mind. But perhaps you're right that the nostalgia ticket will be enough.
That's kind of where I was going. What I would also hope might be the case is that you're not walking around with the camera on your cell phone on all the time, and you're bumping into things because you're looking through your camera of your cell phone onto the front of your cell phone, trying to find these Pokemon hiding around. That there may be some other mechanisms to help you find them. You know, maybe some sort of proximity beeping, or maybe some connections into the next generation of the HoloLens, or maybe on your watch or your mobile wearable devices that are leading you to find these guys and alerting you with haptics, perhaps, instead of the visualization all the time.
And so, then you can take out your phone and use the camera.
Yeah, then you take out the phone and use the camera to capture them, right?
Yeah.
Take a picture of them.
I'm curious what, you know, what's the adult version of this going to look like? Post-Pokemon.
Well, I mean, we've imagined a little bit about that, too. And the dating app version would be kind of an interesting play, too, that says, hey, you know, what kind of people are here at the stadium, the restaurant, the ice skating rink, whatever, that might be approachable, right? You know, there could be things like that, and you're not necessarily capturing them, I guess, but you might capture their attention as a possibility.
Find all the Marvel Comics fans in the room. Something like that.
go to a Comic-Con and see what could happen, right?
Right.
Well, that's about all we have time for today. I know we had a lot to catch up on, and it was super to hear your experiences from Adelaide and from the SimTech conference too, Phaedra. Before we go, though, what games are you playing these days that you want to share with the audience?
There have been some great games that the business partners of ours have been showing, including some really interesting ones around medicine. There's a high school we've been working with out in Austin, Texas, that has created a medical Minecraft mod where you're flying nanobots through a human body in Minecraft, and we're actually working with them to get it integrated with cognitive computing. So I'm diving in more and more into some of these kinds of projects. It's been great fun.
That is so incredibly cool. I love it. So for
me. Yeah, all high school kids, fully developed. So I'm super proud of them. We'll be making a curriculum out of it.
You know, we should talk about this a little offline as well. My oldest boy created a Minecraft club at his middle school. Didn't exist before. Negotiated it with the principal. Created curriculum, so it was not just, hey, let's go play, but let's go and experience things in Minecraft and bring those lessons in as they would relate to the schoolwork they were doing too. So you know, there's so much that can happen out of Minecraft. I'm very excited about what you've just described.
Oh yeah, definitely. We'll hook up your son for sure, get him on the project.
Yeah, that would be fun. I bet he would love it. The one game that I want to put a little bit of focus on, just because I love this so much, is during the Apple announcements on the 9th is what, yeah, 2 days ago. Feels like it wasn't that long ago. One of the things that they demoed on the Apple TV, which is now going to have apps on it in addition to television shows and movies and so on, is the Crossy Road example. And they will have, when the Apple TV is available for purchase, the ability to play Crossy Road on the Apple TV in multiplayer mode. So this is a game where it's like a little bit like Frogger, where you're kind of moving forward, and if you get hit by a car, your life is over. And in the multiplayer mode, as long as one of the two of you are still in existence, the other one can be brought back in with a crane and dropped in, and you can kind of keep on jumping away. So I love that because it reminded me so much of playing competitive Mario Brothers as a high school student, where you would just bump the turtles into your friends and watch them as they would fall off the screen and lose a life.
So, that's cool.
Yeah, I love it. Well, that's guys, cool. Thank you so much for everyone for listening in. Please drop us a line with some things you're curious about, where you think augmented reality is going to go, where you have some ideas about how motivational design might work, or maybe some decultivation objectives yes. you have in your life. We'd love to hear from you.
Or if you know what that cult book is, How to Get People Out of Cults, please let us know what the title is so I might be able to pick up the book.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks, y'all, for listening. You can find us in all the usual places, and we'll be back with another episode again in a week's time. See ya.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.